comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Five votes.
Okay, I'll tell you what, we're just going to have to use a whole different setup than what we had planned on, at least until that break. We'll bring the old studio mic back in here. Hi, how you doing? It is good to see you here, and I hope that you are delighted to be here. I am delighted to be here, and you know, we're here because you have a right to know. It's really that simple. We are here because you have a right to know, and because you matter. Our members community is there for you, and I'd like to urge you, if you know, there are a lot of people that sit around thinking, I don't know whether I want to join. Okay, go ahead and do all that little old baby stuff. But let me tell you, if you're not a member, you're missing out on about 80% of what goes on here at the Kevin Smith Show. You're missing about 80%. I just discovered that those over on the radio were not hearing. We're having a little technical issue, and it's not because something's breaking down. It's because we've added something into the stream here. Into the flow of technology. So for those of you on the radio, I do apologize to you. You were hearing me way in the background, but now you're hearing me okay, all right? We'll try to figure out what's the deal with that echo and this headset in just a bit. But anyway, we'll see how that goes. But in the members community, there you're missing, if you're not there, you're missing about 80% of what goes on here. One of the things that happens, you know, we always talk about this, you get to see the show live if you're in the members community. If you happen to miss the show, you get to watch it for the next 24 hours anyway, because we capture it and upload it. But that's not all. I mean, look, we've got forums that are sizzling hot. We've got some of the smartest people on this planet, truly, that think outside the box and are members and that post things in the forums for you to take a look at and for you to decide what you think about and to comment on. We have a chat room. So you can meet up with some of your friends and just chat away and have a good time. And we invite you to use that. You get your own blog page. You get your own video album for you to upload videos of things that, you know, are related to our genre somehow. You see a UFO or a Bigfoot, or you just maybe you want to upload video of your kid's birthday party or whatever, you know. You can do that. You get your own photo album, same kind of thing. If you're not a member, you are so missing out. $7.50, that's all it costs to join. $7.50 a month, and we're waiting for you. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. As I said, we're having to do stuff a little bit weird here. I won't go into all the reasons why, but we hopefully we'll get all this worked out in just a few minutes. So We did audio tests with our guest, as we normally do. However, the audio tests we did were not using this studio mic. So let me just see if my guest can hear me. Walter, can you hear me?
I sure can, loud and clear. How do you hear me?
Oh, great. Okay, well, at least the malfunction tilted in our favor this time. My guest is Walter Bosley. Now, he's been on this show a bunch of times over the years. Walter's a personal friend of mine as well as being the guest tonight. I first met Walter Bosley at a film premiere for the film Fast Walkers, and it was in a gigantic city called Sholo, Arizona. And that's where I first met him. Walter is formerly U.S. Air Force OSI, and formerly the chief of counterespionage operations at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. That is sort of the connection, that sort of background, that sort of, that sort of background. That was sort of the connection that many of his appearances here were linked to, not directly, but that kind of background as applied to UFO investigation and paranormal investigation. Tonight, he's here in a little different capacity, and that is, as you know, he is these days, he is a published author, he is a publisher, and he's a great investigator, great researcher, and now a filmmaker. So, Walter Bosley, filmmaker, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me on in this capacity, Kevin. It's going to be a lot of fun talking about this stuff with your audience.
Walter, you have a background in filmmaking that a lot of people didn't know about. Right. You have an education in that. Tell us just a little bit about that.
Well, it was my first love, making films. Before I got into the spook business, when I was in junior high school, like 12, 13 years old, I loved movies. I started making movies then in Super 8, actual film, and made films through high school. And when I got into college, I started as a film major, but I, after the first 2 years, I switched over to journalism when I transferred to San Diego State. And during my college years, I quit making movies except in film class, and I got more focused on my writing, specifically screenplays. And I did a little production assistant work during and especially right after college. And when my interest, professional interest and career, path, I guess, went the different way that it did, I actually continued with the writing. I, you know, had written a screenplay my couple of years before I started with the Bureau. I wrote a couple more during the time I was working for the FBI, and I continued to write during my time with the Air Force. In fact, during the late 90s, when I was in Los Angeles at LA Air Force Base, a good friend and I, we were kind of a writing team. We had an agent, and we came very close to selling a couple of screenplays of ours to one to Michael Paré, the actor who was in the Philadelphia Experiment movie. And we also placed in a screenwriting competition. Now, my buddy, he was a professional architect, and, there I was, a federal agent on active duty military service. And I just kept up the writing over the years, and when I left the military and started doing the counterterrorism consulting work and was traveling, I continued writing. That's when I started the publishing also, and kept pursuing it. And when I decided to work domestically back in 2005, I then really started pursuing selling a screenplay, perhaps producing a film version of one of my novels, and started working with an agent again. And finally, after a couple of false starts, finally, this year, I'm able to, you know, just get in there and make my own films and start to, get them distributed.
Okay, so you've got one that you've just completed, and it's scheduled for a premiere very, very soon.
That's right.
It's called Hell's Bells. And I found this one to be, very interesting for a couple of reasons.
Uh-huh.
For one, you did this in the old style, silent movie style. And so, in other words, there's a music background, but there's no voices heard from the actors. And right. and we have the script cards that come up on the screen. I found that very interesting, and I found it very interesting because, first, it's been a long time since I've seen one of those, and if they're artfully done, if they're well done, they're very, very interesting, and they kind of take us back to yesteryear. But also,
exactly, and that's the point of why I made the film the way I did. There's actually an interesting story as to, the background as to why I chose to do a silent film. And I was really motivated by, there's a group called the H.P. Lovecraft Historical Society, and back in 2005 they released a silent 1920s version of the story, The Call of Cthulhu, and it's a real fun movie. It's only 47 minutes, and that was their first film that they had done as a group. And because the camera I had, of course, shoots the high-definition image for big-screen projection, I was good with that, but my budget didn't allow me to get the sound equipment that I would ultimately need to do, regular sound movies. So I decided my first film, out of kind of technological necessity, would be a silent film. And because I'm such a fan of the Lovecraft guy's Call of Cthulhu silent movie, I decided, well, heck, I'll do a silent movie. And lo and behold, wouldn't you know it, this was last October, I go to Vegas for Thanksgiving, and I see for the first time the preview for The Artist, the silent film that won Best Picture at the Oscars.
Mm-hmm.
And I was really intrigued, and when I finally saw the film, The Artist, I loved it. And I realized, wow, okay, yeah, I'm on the right track. There is an audience for doing a silent homage, and mine is, and I'll get into this later, but mine is more an homage than it is a pastiche. But that was the history behind why I chose to do a silent film.
Okay. Now, the next reason that I was intrigued by this,
mm-hmm,
is that it matches the time setting for the plot. The plot is, it takes us back in years.
Right.
And so it matches that, so we get the feel of the plot itself. And now I'm going to say to you something I have already said to others on this show, and I think I've said to you in private conversations.
Uh-huh.
And that is that, some of the greatest theater that was ever done was radio theater.
Right.
And that's because, number one, you had to have excellent writing. You really had to have a good story. You had to have excellent writing. And then the actors really had to be in character, because everybody was sitting at home picturing all of this in their minds. And so the writing had to be excellent, the acting had to be excellent. When it moved to the movies, the writing was still excellent, and the acting was still excellent. But somewhere along the way, stunts and special effects have replaced the necessity for a great script, for great writing, and even for great acting. And so now, we go watch, a chain of special effects and stunts, and maybe a little acting along the way. So this movie required great acting, great expression, and a great script. And I think it hit the target.
Well, thanks. It's definitely, it's a niche film. What you just described that Hollywood's been putting out for several years now, that pretty much, you have to understand, their median demographic that they're serving is they got to keep the 12 through 14 year olds happy, because that's who mostly will fill the theaters and love the one special effect after another kind of thing. And the investors in the big films these days, they're not really, most of them aren't film people. They're just people with money who want the glamour and fun of saying they invested in a movie, but they darn well want a return. And so Hollywood plays the safe thing. That's why we see so much of what you described. They don't want to take really too many chances on something that might be well written, but isn't a wall-to-wall extravaganza. And it's unfortunate that the big money goes to that. However, you know, it just so happens that in our times, the way the market has changed and the venues have changed, actually, you know, there is a way to get the different kinds of films out there, and Hell's Bells is one of those. If you're looking for, I tell people, if you're looking for the multiplex movie experience, you're not going to find it with Hell's Bells. There are no explosions. There is not one single frame of CGI in this film. It's just not that kind of a movie. So it will please true indie fans. It'll please cult fans. It'll please, you know, people that are into silent horror films. It's a niche film, of course, but that's what I set out to make. So I say that proudly.
All right, so let's talk a little bit about Hell's Bells. Is it based on any of the books that you've written?
No, actually, it is a retelling of the Aladdin tale, specifically the tale of Jafar, the sorcerer, who cannot go into the Cave of Wonders himself, so he has to dupe the young Aladdin to go get the treasure for him. Well, it's a retelling of that. We have a character who basically cons a woman and her brother into going on this adventure to a lost ancient mine to retrieve a lost treasure from that mine that he knows is there, and he needs it for a reason, and of course all the rest unfolds in the story.
The when you say it's a retelling, and I think this is important for people to understand, it is not a depiction of the Aladdin story. In other words, you don't have Aladdin and the lamp and all of the Arabian looking stuff. Not at all. It's a whole resetting of it.
Mm-hmm.
What makes this a horror movie?
A horror film. Well, I do want to say one more thing on the story part. It is a remake of an 18-minute short film I did in 2010 that was on YouTube briefly. But essentially the story element of Jafar and Aladdin and stuff is there. What makes it a horror film is what they encounter when they are on their adventure. There are two intriguing, enigmatic ladies in black who appear at one point at a train station. And some interesting things go on around them. And it's, you know, very much in the classic horror tradition.
Do they have, like, various challenges that they have to, obstacles they have to get over in order to proceed, or, what's the plot line here? The guy says, okay, go get this treasure, and they start to get it. So, on their journey, is that the story?
Well, it's not an action picture. It really is a horror fable set against a classic adventure backdrop. It's not really action-packed at all. It is mostly focused on characters and situation. it is, as far as the action of the story goes, that's pretty simple and straightforward. They, you know, the character has a need. He gets the people who can help him, and they strike out across the desert. And along the way, they meet some interesting characters, and the woman and her brother learn more about this treasure they're going after. They also learn more about the man who has convinced them to go along on this adventure. And
is there
more about the consequences and what happens to them while they're out there?
Is there something about this man that's mysterious? Is the guy who's getting them to go get this thing for him, whatever it is, this treasure, is there something really mysterious about this guy?
Oh, there's a reason he needs the treasure, and mm-hmm. that is told in the story. There's very much a reason why he needs this treasure, and they learn that, and
is he a human?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah. So does the plot line incorporate anything that we would consider sort of paranormal in there?
Oh, yes, of course. Of course. That's my favorite brand of horror film. That was my first favorite genre. That's what I grew up on. I love supernatural horror, mm-hmm. and it is my favorite. I'm not into what they call these days torture porn, like the Saw films or Hostel. I'm not into the gory, disgusting displays of carnage. I won't go into that because I don't want to insult anybody who loves those movies, but that stuff doesn't do it for me. I much prefer that the well-done supernatural paranormal type of horror. So it does have a nice little dose of that.
All right, now we're going to take a break. For those who are watching, you're going to see some little clips from Hell's Bells during the first part of this break. And then when we come back, Walter, during the break, think of one of the paranormal things that you could share with us. And when we come back, I'll get you to relate that to us. All right, folks, we'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Walter Bosley. Walter is talking with us about a film that he's just completed. It's called Hell's Bells. It's a silent film. I've seen portions of it. Those of you who are members and you are watching, you have now just seen some small clips out of it, just some shots. And we're talking about the film, and as we went away for break, I asked Walter to think of some one of the paranormal things that these people run into in the film that he can share with us. I know he's got a premiere coming up. We don't want him to spill the beans and ruin the film, maybe just a little teaser, a little taste of one of the things that these people have to encounter that's paranormal. Walter, did you come up with one?
Oh, actually, there's a couple of paranormal things I can tell you about. Plus, I forgot, I want to throw in, there's also some fans of alternative ancient history and things like that will like a little aspect of the film, because there's a touch of that in the backstory. But essentially, the paranormal aspects of the film are centered around Fausto, who is the character in the beret that you saw in the preview, the gentleman, the dark-looking gentleman. And he has some skills not unlike what Bela Lugosi used in a few of his movies when he would mesmerize people, particularly women. We have a little bit of that. He has the powers of mesmerization. And also the ladies in black, they themselves, there's, you know, an interesting revelation about them that's a lot of fun in that regard. Maybe something about shifting, you know, but I'll leave it there. And the other part I was talking about is that the treasure is a bell, a very old bell that was stolen from a lost city in South America that was built by the ancient giants. And this bell was stolen by the last giant king of Pumapunku. He's a corrupt evil king. He's a selfish, greedy guy. And he steals the bell and secrets it away farther north. And the story does not get specific, but there's a couple of little clues that we might be somewhere in South America outside of Peru or Bolivia. And there might be, you know, might be a little appearance of him in there, but it has, me being me and what you guys know I'm interested in, you know, I couldn't do a film without the influence or the involvement of elements like that, because I'm so interested in it. It inspires what I do as a writer, and it's just a lot of fun to include. So, yeah, this movie does have some things that people that, you know, are listeners to your show and are interested in these topics. This movie has some things that they will particularly enjoy.
Okay, now, I think it's interesting when we go to the website talking about this upcoming premiere. You use the name for your movie production company, Lost Amazon Movie Productions, right?
Lost Amazon Motion Pictures.
Motion Pictures.
My publishing company that I release all my films under.
Mm-hmm.
The name that I give for the productions are No Budget Cinema Productions.
That's where I was headed. The No Budget Cinema Productions.
And ain't that the truth?
Yeah. Now, this is important for our genre because we have a lot of people in our genre who have a lot of great ideas. Mm-hmm. And they've got a lot of talent. Mm-hmm. But, as you know, when you deal with anything in this genre, you can pretty much forget about having much of a budget. It just works out that way. Everybody loves it when you come out with a great book and they, you know, oh, they love it. But trying to get those people that love it, that have money, to support your project, to invest in it, we don't want to do that, and they'll shy away from it.
That's for sure. That's for sure, and you just have to. You know, I do want to say, and we'll get into this a little later, but Hell's Bells is just the first of the films I'm already committed to doing under my no budget banner. In fact, here in just about 3 weeks, I'll be starting to shoot my next feature, which will there will be a trailer. Get a little sneak preview at the Hell's Bells premiere for that movie, the second film, which that'll be a 90-minute feature, and I'll have finished shooting it by the time Hell's Bells premieres. So, and then I intend also, and we can talk about this later too, I intend to start doing some documentary segments on my Empire of the Wheel research, to actually taking, you know, people around to the locations and such. So I bring that up to say that you know, you're absolutely right. In our particular genre, the paranormal or the alternative, you know, science or history field, we are kind of forced to just take the available technology that allows us to at least get out there in the marketplace and just go ahead and do things on our available resources. And you'd be amazed at what you can accomplish. You know, some people have looked at the trailer, and they were really surprised at how little, when I told them how little I spent on this film. And half of what I spent went into the gas tank just getting us to the locations. So it's, you know...
Let's talk about that a little bit. I know right now of someone who is producing a self-produced sort of tutorial documentary kind of thing, one of our members. And I know of others who have, within our members, who have expressed an interest in and a desire to, you know, do a documentary, do a film about certain incidents that have happened in their area and so forth. And then the problem is they say, well, yeah, but you know, the thing is, I don't know where to start. I don't know, you know, I can't get a budget for it. I can't get investors in it. I wouldn't even know how to. Let's talk about that a little bit. Is it possible for somebody that just has a great idea and would like to get it on film, is it possible for them to do a film?
Absolutely. All you have to do, here's what you do, here's what I do with no-budget cinema pictures. I get the idea. I say, okay, I want to do a film on this idea. Okay, what are my available resources? And when I look at that, that will determine what kind of film I can do. Now, documentaries are even easier than doing a narrative fiction, you know, fun dramatic film like Hell's Bells or my next film's going to be. Because a documentary, you're just communicating straightforward information. And if you don't have a budget, but if you have a camera or have access to a camera, you know, that's half the battle right there. You don't need the budget because, you know, particularly these days, you don't need necessarily to release it in a theater or on television right off the bat. All you need to do is be able to shoot it and get it on a DVD or a flash drive or some similar medium like that. But if you don't have a budget, you simply say, okay, I will do a lot of, you know, stationary camera. I'll put a backdrop against myself, put myself in a suit and tie, and I'll combine the image of me talking with graphic images, much like you do on your show every night, and much like we did during the alternative conference, where, you know, you go back and forth between the speaker and just simply a graphic image that, you know, again, if you have simply a computer with Photoshop, you know, you can do that. So you can actually make really good documentaries in that style with, you know, if you've already got the equipment and you've already got the suit and tie and you got the backdrop, and you know what I mean. You can get the imagery usually off the internet for nothing.
Well, my backdrop, as you know, Walter, my backdrop is just black.
That way. Now, if you have the money to spend on gasoline or transportation, well, then you can actually go to locations, and that's always better. That's always a step above, like when we went to South Mountain and such.
Mm-hmm.
But you don't have to do a documentary, you don't have to have, you know, any kind of set budget ahead of time. And anybody who tells you that you have to, okay, you know, they're not really thinking it through. They're not being creative enough. You know, I argue that you can do the same thing with a dramatic film.
Well, you know, I'm going to do something that may be surprising to some people, okay? I'm going, there are several of our members who have gotten in touch with me and wanted to know, well, what do I need in order to, you know, to do this, you know? And I've said, you know, you got a camera? Well, yeah, but it's nothing, but, you know, it's just a little, you know, consumer-type camera, just a video camera. I don't have any professional equipment. All right, now I'm going to do something. I'm going to show them something.
What I shoot my movies with. I shot Hell's Bells with a Sony Handycam.
All right, well, I'm going to show them something right now if they're watching. Okay. What you're seeing, let me put something up here so you can see this a little better. Okay. What you're seeing is my little consumer camera, okay? And this little thing cost me. This is a Toshiba. And this little camera cost me $272. Now, the reason I'm showing that is because I know a studio that has shot professional video of live events with this exact model of camera. And they put it out there for public consumption. I'm not kidding. $272 camera. Now, the audio is a different thing. We'll talk about that a little bit. But the point is, a lot of you folks watching this show, a lot of you folks listening to this show, you are selling yourself short. And you think that it takes somebody with a whole lot of film knowledge and a whole lot of budget and you would like, there's something that has happened in your area, there's something you would like to tell the world about, some paranormal experience or UFO experience, and you're selling yourself short because you think it can't be done except by guys with big cameras and big budgets and big microphones. That's not the case. As I said,
will tell you that you have to have all that stuff.
Well, as I said, I know a studio that has three of these cameras that they take and set up and use at live events and shoot it in HD and make it available to the public in great quality. We're going to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Walter Bosley, and we're talking about, there are a lot of folks who, they think, well, I didn't tune in here for that. I wanted to listen about UFOs. Here, hold my beer while I switch a channel. But listen, our genre is suffering from crap information because people with real information think they have no way to get it out there. And Walter is living proof you can. And, like I said, if you got a little consumer-type camera, now this one is very good. It's a Toshiba. It costs $272. It shoots in true HD. And if you can afford better, get better. But hey,
yours might as well. Might also mine. My Sony Handycam that I use is the one that has the highest resolution. It's 1080p. Now with 1080p, you can shoot image that that is good for the large format televisions people have, high definition TVs, but also for theatrical exhibition.
Yeah.
So in other words, you could shoot a documentary or film. Anything you shoot with that can be exhibited in a theater. I've already seen the trailer that you're showing tonight. I've projected that on the big screen at the theater we're going to premiere at. And the image is wonderful. It's perfect. And so don't think that these cameras, you can't ever get it out there on the big screen anywhere. Oh, yes, you can. I'm living proof of that, too. Mine is, because we're premiering at a theater, and we're going to be entering the film in festivals. But
You know, now let's shock everybody. Are you willing to say
is the magic number on the camera? If you, you know that you want to look for.
Let's shock everybody. Are you willing to say how much you spent producing this film?
Yeah. It doesn't. I spent. I haven't finished tallying up all the receipts, but it's somewhere around $500. And honestly, at least $250 of it went into the gas tank just to get us to the location. We shot, and this will be of interest to your listeners, we shot a great deal of it, a good portion of it, out in Landers, which is where the Integratron is located. Those of you who've been out to the Integratron will immediately recognize Giant Rock, that area called Giant Rock that we shot a portion of the film in. And, you know, that was one of the locations. Yucca Valley, of course, is where that's at. And up in what's called the Cajon Pass, and over on Mount Rubidoux, but that's kind of just across town here. But, I probably spent on costuming and props, and some makeup and other little things, doodads here and there. I probably spent about, $300, $400, and what I have is essentially a feature film that by the time I'm done cutting it and we're done with post-production is going to be somewhere around 50 minutes.
Okay, and
what you see in the trailer is, how it looks.
Okay. Now, folks, when in our genre, you've heard me talk about this. This is so important. In our genre, we have some filmmakers that are very well, pardon me, very well known and so talented, like Jose Escamilla, like James Fox, like David Serrata, and I don't want to leave anybody out, but I can't just keep listing. We've got a few. But listen, I told you about one that's very well known that told me he would never do another film in the UFO genre because, number one, people all love it, but they don't want to spend $9 to buy his DVD. Okay, and he's a great filmmaker, very well known. And then they wait till someone steals it and puts it on YouTube, then they download it, put it on DVDs, and start sharing it with each other.
Yeah.
And so he said, that's it. He said, me and my family just about went bankrupt over doing this last film we did because people stole from us. Okay, so, and I know you may be thinking, well, I didn't do it. I understand, it's not everybody, but it doesn't take everybody. It just takes enough. And,
it takes one person to load something up on the internet for whatever their motive is. It only takes that one person to do it, and you're wiped out.
Yeah.
You are essentially wiped out on making a dime on, what you... Now, some people would say, well, the heck with you, Walter. You only spent $500, so what? You're out $500. Well, that's a lot of man hours and a lot of time and a lot of work. And, quite frankly, I'm not making this movie to give it away.
Yeah.
I'm not
giving
it away to anybody.
But the point is, we're losing these film producers in our genre, folks. We're losing them.
Right. People will not... They will not make the films anymore. They'll say to heck with it if, now, the other side of that coin is that the economy is, the worst it's been in, I can say, my lifetime. And,
yeah.
People just don't have the money, perhaps, but...
Well, that's now. He went out of business and told me this in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
He's not out of the film business. He's out of our genre. And and we did it to him, okay? And I didn't personally, and you didn't, but I'm talking about people in our genre did it And okay, so we're losing these guys. Plus, folks, we're all getting older. Okay? And some of these people are getting up in years. And not David Serrata, not James Fox, and not Jaime, Jose Escamilla, not Jaime Maussan. But there are a few that are getting up in years, and we are all going to. And so it takes new blood. And there's new information that needs to hit the films. There's new, solid, good information. And if you've got a camera and you've got a dream that you would like to see your story in film, you know, whatever it is, your UFO experience, your paranormal experience, there's no reason that you cannot make that film. Walter, I even, in preparation for this, I went on the internet, I went on YouTube, and I just put in a few search terms to see, is there any training, is there any tutorial there that will help someone who's never done a documentary know how to do it? And in fact, there's a full course.
Oh, there's a lot of them.
Yeah.
There's a lot of filmmakers that have put this kind of information out there. You know, you don't need to go to film school. Film school is not what it was. Kind of like college is not what it was. You know, some of the most successful filmmakers, there's a quote going around out there when Quentin Tarantino was asked which film school he went to. His answer was, I didn't go to film school. I went to films. I went to see films, and that was his film school. Mm-hmm. And that's really, all you need is that and a basic understanding of photographic composition. And you know what? The human eye figures that one out pretty quickly. If you've watched enough movies, if you've watched enough documentaries, you get a feel for how to frame the image. And, you know, you get that and the equipment and your idea, and that's all you need. And
well,
you can go and beyond that, there's tutorials all over the place on YouTube that will teach you everything you want to know to make a film.
One of the names that comes to mind right now is a guy by the name of Jeff Gonzalez, and he's in the Fresno area. And he's not a professional filmmaker. He is a UFO investigator and a UFO researcher associated with MUFON. He's a paranormal investigator associated with the Sanger Paranormal Group. And so, but they have just taken a camera and made available to us recordings of their live experiences and their investigations and so forth. This is just one example. And this is not something that's excessively expensive for them. They've got the cameras. They turn the cameras on, and then they make it available for us. And that's important, folks. We just look at what's available on YouTube right now. It's crap. We need better. We'll be back. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Walter Bosley. Walter Bosley is former U.S. Air Force OSI. He is a fantastic investigator, researcher. He's a published author. He is a publisher and now a filmmaker as well. And we're talking about something that is really critically important. Now, we've been talking about his film, Hell's Bells, and using that as a little bit of a springboard, hopefully we're providing you with some information about how you can go about this. You can provide film. You know, folks, what I was saying when we went away for break is that, number one, we have a limited number of filmmakers that will deal honestly with our genre. There's a bunch of them that will deal falsely with us. A whole bunch of them that will deal crap to us. But there's only a handful that will deal honestly with our genre of information, seriously considering the things that we talk about. Okay, so I mentioned that. There is a need for more information getting out there in a good and interesting format, and it can be done by virtually anybody with a camera. It really can. And then I use the example of Jeff Gonzalez. You know something? He's not the only one, but he's been on this show, and I want to use him as an example. He takes his camera out there and he on his investigations, and he gets what he can get and brings it back and shares it with us. Do you remember the show, folks, where there had been something that crashed, an odd air vehicle of some kind had crashed against the side of a mountain out in Fresno, north of Fresno, and he took his camera and he went out to the place where the person was who reported it to him, and they set the camera up and they got night shots of the activity on the side of the mountain where this somebody was over there removing this object that had crashed. Remember that? Now you might say, well, okay, anybody can do that. Yes, and that's the point. That is the point. You can be providing great information for the UFO genre, for the paranormal genre, instead of all this hoaxed up, fakey looking crap that's getting dumped into YouTube. You can do it, and you don't have to have a lot of money. Walter is living proof that you can do it. He's done it with a feature-length film. Now, the camera that I told you about that I've got has the 1080p as well. That's the resolution.
That's a key number.
That's a key number.
I want to say, too, that I spent $500 on a dramatic film. When you start seeing my Empire of the Wheel documentary segments, when you hear about those getting produced, those won't cost me nearly that much. Now, I happen to live where all of it happened, but the documentary stuff that I will do will cost virtually nothing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you know, the one of the things that we talked about is, you know, the audio. And, you know, for something that's going to be released in cinemas, yeah, you do have to have the deep, rich sound for your audio. Or, well, maybe. I mean, Michael Moore didn't, you know?
Well, let's rephrase it, Kevin. You've got to have an appropriate threshold of sound, but you do not necessarily need the equipment that an industry person would tell you you need.
Right.
Because you might be amazed at what you, how you can meet the theatrical exhibition threshold with some very affordable equipment that's out there, and you happen to know of some of these devices yourself.
Yeah, and also the software that you would need to edit your film. You know, you can use free software, folks, to do a great job editing. Is it easier and more fun and nice to be able to say that you've got Final Cut or you've got Sony Vegas Pro or you've got Adobe Premiere? Yeah, but look, here's the deal. A Rolls-Royce and a Volkswagen do exactly the same thing. They carry your butt from point A to point B. And so some of these free programs have a lot of the same features, and you can do it. Now, I want to open the telephone lines for anybody who is, you have any interest at all in, you know, getting your information out there where people can see it. Here's somebody who has studied filmmaking, who has made this film, who's written scripts for others. And, you know, he's just done a film that's going to be released in the theater, and it's on the big screen, and he spent $500 on it. So if you have any questions about how to do these things, I want you to call and ask and talk with him, and I'll give you all the time I can to talk with him. But, folks, think about this. We spend most of our time on this show trying to figure out whether what we've just looked at is a hoax or whether it's real. And it's because we have people who are not genuine in our genre who are producing all these things and putting them on YouTube. And while everybody else sits back, you know, sitting on their thumb saying, well, gee, I wish I could. But you can. And that's the point. You can. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. And if you are in the USA or Canada, give us a call at that number. If you're not in the USA, if you're not in Canada, you can call that number, or you can use the flash message feature on my website. But getting your story, you know, some of you have written to me and you've said, you know, my granddad has told me this and this and this about ghosts. Or, he's, you know, my grandmother has told me this and this and this about UFOs. Did you ever stop to think it might be a great thing to get that on video and share that? These are people who are advanced in age. They're not going to be around forever. Don't you think it would? Who else is going to do it if you don't do it? It's kind of like that telephone. Who else is going to make that call if you don't get the guts to do it? 623-444-5889. Walter, we had a new listener that was listening to the archives and made the comment that, boy, Kevin gets upset when people don't call. Yeah, and I do. And you know why? I get upset because I wonder why you would ever even complain about losing your freedom of speech when you didn't use it. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Brent from Wyoming. All right, Brent, what's on your mind?
I'm going to say this. I am working on it. It's probably going to be close to half an hour. It is an instructional course on how to think outside the box. I have no budget, zero budget. And most of the software I'm using is a 16-bit running on a 32-bit machine. It is over 12 years old.
That what? It can be done, can't it, Walter?
Yes, of course. It just depends on what your vision for the style of documentary you want to do is. How do you want to visually deliver the information?
What do you mean by that, Walter?
Well, when you have no budget, you know, you may not be able to go to the interesting visual location. You might have to sit right there in your house and put up an interesting backdrop and get in the suit and tie, as I mentioned before, and cut back and forth to JPEG, type of graphics that you put together on, you know, whatever program you do have on your computer.
Yeah, I agree. All I'm trying to say is, people, all you have to do is be honest. Do the best you can with the video and sound, but be honest.
That's it. And Brent, there is a market for reality. Brent, I know you watch the show virtually every night, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Have you seen the spot where Sammy, the young lady, is starting to do the spot, and her little boy comes into the screen and sits down, totally unplanned, and just kind of steals the show? Have you seen that?
Yes, I have. That's what you call real life.
Very real. She was shocked because she was trying. I found this out later. She had been trying to make a promo for us, and her son kept interrupting the promo. And finally, she just left the camera on, and this time, and there he was, and, you know, and we got what we got. I love it. It's one of the best promos we ever had.
I agree.
Because it's real.
That's right. Well, I got to go because we're doing canning tonight, so I'll see you.
All right. Good luck with the film project, man. Yeah. Look, folks, I don't know how you got convinced that somebody else is going to do your idea. But they did. You did. You got convinced of that. You got convinced that somebody else is going to call in and ask your question. Somebody else is going to make your video. Somebody else is going to tell your story. Somebody else, somebody else, somebody else. And it ain't happening. It's not going to happen. You don't stand up and be you. There's no one else in the cosmos to be you. And you've got information and stories to tell. And, you know, we're trying to provide you with information here tonight on how you can do it. It's not hard. It's not hard at all. It's not difficult. You know what it takes? It takes getting up off your butt and doing it. That's what it takes. You've got what it takes already. It takes getting off your butt and doing it. All right, to the telephone, caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Mark from Los Angeles.
Hello, Mark.
Well, I don't make movies or anything like that, but I do dabble a little bit. And, you know, when they came out a couple years back with, I think it was Blair Witch Project,
yeah,
it started a new style of videography. And there's nothing saying that you can't start a new style. I mean, Super 8 millimeter, you can get back into that if you want.
Well, you can. It's pretty hard pretty hard to get people to see that because nobody's got a projector anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, what I'm saying is you can do anything you want. You know, say the style, okay, I don't have HD, but you can still go low res and make it look low res to make it look older. You know, start a new style. Because to me, HD, the stuff that they have on TV, I don't like it.
Well, let me give you an example, Mark. Now, Walter, do you remember the day we went out to South Mountain and climbed around on South Mountain and I took the camera?
Yes. Oh, yes.
That camera was not HD. HD did not exist at that point. When we went out there, HD did not exist. It was in the experimental beta process. But the cameras were not available to us at that point. And I shot that documentary that day with a camera that I bought in 2002. I bought that camera in East Timor. It was the only video camera available to buy in East Timor. Not the only model. It was the only one. I'm serious.
Literally
the only one. One store had a video camera, and they had that one, and it was it. And I bought it. Okay, that's what I shot that with. Now, as a matter of fact, today, Walter, I loaded up that raw video because I now have better software than I had then, and I'm sharpening it up, making it look a little better, and I'm going to re-release it with a new edit. But, folks, that documentary from Walter and me being out there on South Mountain, that's what I'm talking about. We just took a camera with us and provided you what we saw. And how much did we spend, Walter? Would we spend like a couple of bucks for Cokes?
I was going to say, we spent time and a few dollars at Jack in the Box where we got breakfast.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. That's it. Mark, although you're not into the video side. You are into the broadcast side. You're, folks, this is the owner and general manager of Indy 104.
Oh, it's Mark. Hey, Mark.
Hey, Walter.
Yeah. Okay, so Mark, you're into the broadcast thing, and you know yourself, although you do have a lot of professional equipment, you know that it wasn't necessary to have it to get started.
Oh, no. In fact, when we first started, we had... oh, man, I'll be embarrassed to say what we had, but we had some really cheesy microphones and old computers, and when we got started, nobody knew the difference. And then the better we get, the better sound. In fact, today we just started our new high-definition broadcast. So, you know, we've expanded a little bit in the last, 15, 16 years.
Yeah. Well, when I first got started with this show, it was an accident. We were having a blizzard. I was in Kosovo. We were having a blizzard. No electricity for weeks. And so there was nothing to do at night. You had no lights. You had no heat. You had no radio, no TV, no nothing. And so to cut to the chase here, I had exhausted everything there was to do to spend my time at nighttime when I was off duty, I decided to talk to my computer. So we had generators at work. I charged up the laptop at work, and I brought it home, and it did not have a built-in microphone. This was in 2000. And so for a microphone, this is how the show started, Mark. For a microphone, I had a little pocket-sized recorder, you know, a little tape recorder.
Yeah.
And so I plugged into the earphone jack on that and then ran the other end of the cord to the microphone jack on the computer, turned on the recorder, and used that built-in microphone as my microphone. The first shows we did, that's how we did it. For the first month and a half, that's how we did it.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we have another guy that does a talk show on our station, and he lives close by, and he doesn't have any equipment except for a computer. So I took over a two-channel mixer, probably a $5 microphone, looks like a Shure SM58, and a little stand, and I can tell you one thing. People do not know the difference. They think he's in a big studio, and he's just in his hallway with a little cheesy mixer and a microphone.
Yeah. But the point is, he's getting his dream out there. That's the point.
Exactly.
And he's delivering.
Now, getting back to the video side, I think the only problem that anybody would have if they did go old style, like if they didn't have the HD, and Walter, tell me if I'm wrong, it's like 16:9 now is the size of the screen where the older ones were 4:3. Does that make a difference?
In what way do you mean? Of course, yeah, there are differences, but
well, he's saying,
does it matter?
If they film
in, if they film in say 4:3 the old style, will it still fit the 16:9 or 16:9 screen properly, or will it stretch it?
Well, there's the option to do the setting. You can leave it at 16:9, or you can set it to 4:3. You can go back and forth.
Well, you can on the modern cameras, but on the older cameras, you can't.
Yeah. So, post production, is there a way to change that, or will it just be stretched out, or will it, you know, crop
well,
it around?
Well, I haven't dealt with it personally, but I'm trying to recall those I know who have. I think it just shows the black bars on either side.
No, they're with the modern editing software, you can just click a little button and it stretches it to fill the 16:9 screen.
Yeah, but it stretches it appropriately. Do you lose any of the image when you do that, though?
No, you can maintain the aspect ratio in the image.
Okay.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So, you know, the point is, even though some of what we're talking about, you're going, what is the aspect ratio and what is 16:9 or what is 4:3? Don't worry about that right now. All you need to worry about is this. You've got information, people. You are the story. You have the information. And only you can get it to the rest of the world. And we're trying to show you how you can do it. We're trying to tell you it's not expensive. And in fact, in some cases, you can do it for free. And, if you've got a camera already, you got a computer, you can do this thing for free. Or you can get extravagant like Walter and spend $500.
That's right.
Yeah.
So, well, Walter, I want to tell you, if I'm in the area November 25th, I'm driving out to the Redlands to see your premiere.
Well, hey, I thank you. I appreciate that. I want to say, if you decide you seriously, can do that, you might want to think about getting your ticket as soon as possible, because we are selling them. And the theater was... this is an actual old movie palace. It was opened in 1928, and the first film they showed was the then latest Laurel and Hardy picture. And so it's not really big. In fact, they no longer have seating in the, I don't believe they have seating in the balcony area anymore. It's all just on the one level. So seats are kind of limited. So it would be great to see you out there, Mark.
Yeah, definitely. And now, how close to Thanksgiving is that? I didn't look at the calendar.
It's the Sunday night of Thanksgiving weekend, and I'm glad you brought that up, because people think, oh my gosh, Thanksgiving weekend, but think about it, the holiday is on Thursday, so that gets knocked out the first day, and then Black Friday, the big shopping day of the year, well, heck, that's done by Friday, and most people, by Sunday afternoon, you're all shopped out and you're all holidayed out. So, if you happen to be near Redlands or in this Inland Empire area or near the area and you want to come to the film, by Sunday night at 7 o'clock, it's just the right thing to finish off your holiday weekend and to kick off the Christmas season.
Exactly. And do you know that the busiest day for movies, you know what day that is?
Oh.
The Thanksgiving Day is the busiest. Yeah, Thanksgiving Day is the busiest day for movie theaters.
There we go.
And Christmas Day is the second busiest, so it's perfect
going
time to
movies
go
on, and it's a natural.
Exactly.
Okay, Mark, I want to thank you for the call. We have to step away for break.
All right, well, thank you. And Walter, we'll see you soon.
Okay, Mark.
All right, folks, we have to step away for a break. Find your telephone. This, what we're trying to do here is break open a whole new exciting realm for you. And we're trying to help you see that you are the story. If we're going to get new information out here, you are the key. We'll be back.
And you are listening to The Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on earth. Healing medicine for the mind.
Welcome back to The Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Walter Bosley. We're talking about how you can change this planet. One way to do it. To the telephone and caller, you're live on The Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kev. This is Christine from Arizona.
Hi, Christine. How are you?
I'm doing great. I was listening to your show tonight, and I sent you a copy of a draft of a book I was writing, and in that book, there are several pictures. Some of them are just orbs. Some of them are actually quite interesting. and one of those pictures was taken during a thunderstorm in Arizona here.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, for a while I was working with some gentlemen up in Phoenix who had a process called the PPP process, where they could take a small, minuscule dot in the sky and enlarge it to where you could actually see what it was.
Uh-huh.
And I said, okay, so I asked them to explain that a little bit, and they said, and they explained it, but I thought, well, if they can take something small and enlarge it, why don't I try it?
Mm-hmm.
So I took this object that appeared in the thunderstorm. Actually, there were several objects. And when we expanded on this, actually, I really don't know what I'm doing with the photo process of enlarging and bringing out something that's very small like that. But then we noticed this object had windows. And one window in the middle, of course, we started playing with that, and I tried and tried and tried. And finally, at midnight, I gave up, went to bed, and I kid you not, it's just really hard to say on the air, but I started dreaming that I was talking to the guys upstairs, and they were telling me how to manipulate that photo to bring out what was behind the window. And so I jumped up at 2 o'clock in the morning. I told my husband, I said, I know how to do it. I ran the computer. It took me about 10 minutes, and we had a face.
Yeah. Was it?
The face first looked like a lion, and I thought, oh, that's weird, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then we started adding pixels to the image process, and lo and behold, we ended up with a human face.
A human face.
Perfectly a human face. Had a hat on. Now, this guy had a hat on with a brim, and in the front of the over the eyes, there was no brim there. There was actually two flaps that came down like goggles that covered his eyes. And at the time, he had them raised up. He had a microphone, very clear that it's a microphone.
Mm-hmm.
He had blonde hair, that much I can tell you.
Yeah, you caught me. I'm sorry. You just caught me. You know, the hat, the microphone, the blonde hair.
Yeah.
All right. It was me.
You have a picture that I sent it to you. If you
yeah.
I'll send you another one.
Yeah, except for the hair part. I don't have any hair left.
Oh, well, he's still handsome, so don't worry
about it. Bald is beautiful.
But take a look at that. Now, it's hard to see because obviously I didn't have a lot to work with. It's kind of fuzzy, but take a look.
Okay.
Okay?
All right. And you need to get that book out. You also need to get a video camera and do what we're talking about and tell your story about how you got these pictures.
Oh,
see,
yeah.
That information about what you just told us, about how you manipulated that picture to make it come out.
Yeah.
Other people need to know how to do that.
I did very little because obviously I'm not, photographically savvy.
Well, see, other people need to know that same information. It was given to you so you could pass it on, and you need to grab your video camera and make it happen.
Well, you know, the thing was, I was just out taking pictures of the lightning. That's all it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite by accident.
Yeah, but how to get that picture to come out like you did, other people want to know how to do that. And you know how now, because you got information, as you say, from the guys upstairs. You need to put that story on video. Yeah, you need to put that story on video and make it available.
Oh, okay.
All right.
We'll do it.
All right, thanks.
All right, good show.
Thank you. Bye-bye. That's what I'm talking about. You see, that's exciting stuff right there, Walter.
Right. It's the real deal, and people can, they can start doing their own documentaries, capturing this video, and, start finding ways to exhibit it that won't expose it to the people who like to load these things up on the Internet so that everybody can have them for free.
Now, let me explain... Sorry about that. Yeah, we got all kinds of weird stuff happening, but only because I've got things routed a different way so we can use the phone tonight. But everything's working, just working weirdly, kind of like me. But see, some things it's okay to do and put up for free, and most of what I put up on the internet, I want it out there for free. But there are special projects that take special time, special attention. These projects, being done by people who are doing this as how they earn their living, we don't need to steal that from them. We need to pay them for it so they can keep doing what they do. Everybody loves David Sirita's movies. Everybody loves Robert Miles' movies, Fast Walkers. That's the one that was premiering when you and I first met. It was at the Fast Walkers world premiere in Sholo. Everybody loves Jose Escamilla's movies. But folks, those are the ones we're talking about. If you take those and you somehow get it for free, or you put it out for free, you're actually stealing right off of their table, because these are guys that do this for a living. Don't do that. But we need you doing what we're talking about, like Christine just called in. Christine is one of our new members, and she had a conference that I spoke at out in Arizona. But she's one of our new members. Now, what we're talking about here is she had this amazing experience where just in her sleep, it came to her how you do this with the computer to get these pictures to come out. Okay, now that information needs to be put on video and made available. We can change the world a lot, and we can do it very rapidly by putting out real truth and real true solid stuff with little mini documentaries, little videos. We can do that. I may never be a great filmmaker, but I can put out these little mini documentaries, and Walter is a great source for telling us how to do it. Walter, the camera that we used the day you and I went to South Mountain, I still have it. Mm-hmm. And why would I keep it? Well, because it's still useful. It can still be used. It's a backup for the other one. So if this one that's HD goes down, if it has a problem, I'm still in business. I still have the old one. And it still makes good video. It's not HD, but my stuff is not for the big screen. You know, when you and I were producing the Alternative Universe Eye Conference, that was some of the greatest information people could ever access. And unfortunately, a lot of people sat on their thumbs and said, I'm not going to do it. And they want me to spend $10. I'm not going to spend $10. And so they passed up all those fantastic speakers, and they missed it, and they missed the great information. But, you know, those guys, the speakers, they didn't use professional video equipment. They used webcams.
That's right. That's right. They used what they had, and we used what we had, each of us. And we put on a good show. And we went out of our way to make sure that the information they shared was not what you'd already heard them talk about on, you know, other interviews.
That's right.
You know, we told them specifically, you've got to share something that you haven't shared anywhere before and that you normally wouldn't talk about in another interview. And so it was, you know, it was, we weren't just having people pay for a regular podcast.
Well, that's true, but the point is, we did a video production live online, unlike anybody else has ever done, and nobody yet has done what we did. And
it's quite a feat, and again, we did it with available resources. You know, when I do one of my films, As I said, alluded to earlier, I look at the resources I have, and that plays a role in which movie I will do. You know, it could, in some people's minds, it could sound silly, but if I have a really great location, I do this as a writer. If I have a really great location, I'm able to build a story around that. Or a really fantastic prop, for example. You might have some really cool thing. And, you know, you can build a story around it. I use local actors, you know, and so I determine, okay, what kind of story can I tell with these actors?
And a lot of people may be...
costuming goes. The first thing I do is go look in my closet. And then I raid the closets of everyone in my family. And then what we have, and then I tell my actors, if you've got, you know, this particular costume piece, then use it. And if after all of that we still don't have it, then I'll buy something, but only usually at a thrift store or at some place like one of these discount stores like TJ Maxx or Marshall's or something.
All right. A lot of people may be surprised to find that there are very good actors who are willing to do this without being paid up front. They're willing to do it because they believe in the film. Now, let me ask you this. And your actors are all very good actors because we can see they have very expressive faces. And it's, you know, they portray with their faces and body motions, they portray the emotion of the scene, and they did a great job with it. All right, so even if, folks, if you're making a film and you need, for instance, a professional narrator, did you know that there are people that have a good deep voice and they're willing to be a professional narrator for your film? Without you paying them up front if they believe in your project. That's the point. Walter, we have a break coming up, but when we come back from this break, I want to ask you about Hell's Bells again. I want to go back there. You chose to do a remake, a resetting of the story that is basically the story of Aladdin. And when we come back from break, I want you to talk to us about why you chose that. What is it about that story that said to you, you need to do this in a different setting? You didn't need to do this in a silent film. What said to you this story? All right, we're going to take a break, and we'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Walter Bosley, and we are on Final Approach. We only have a few minutes left in tonight's show. You know, Walter, this show, last week on Thursday, this show got attacked severely worldwide. And there are people sitting around right now scratching their rear wondering, well, what's this show tonight got to do with UFOs? Folks, we are faced with a situation on this planet in most of our countries where we have to have alternative ways of getting information out. We're trying to tell you some ways you can do it. We're trying to show you some ways that you, not somebody else, you. It's you're the one watching this. You're the one listening to this. It's your responsibility. Not somebody else's. It's yours. And we're trying to show you some ways that you can help get it out. I'm not going to be here forever. Okay, one of the best things about being Kevin Smith is I don't have to do it a whole lot longer. I'm not destined for a long life on this planet. And somebody else, you, have got to start picking up the reins. You have got to start plowing the fields here. You, not somebody else. We are so close to getting a lot of disclosure and a lot of information, but you know what? If we run out of gas just before we hit the city limits, we're stuck. And the only way to make sure it doesn't happen is you. You matter. And you matter because of what you can contribute to the cause of getting information and getting truth out there. So I appreciate Walter for sharing with us. You know, yeah, we've talked about the film, and that's important, and we want you to sign up and go to the premiere if you can go to the premiere. That's what we want you to do, okay? But because of how Walter made this film, I wanted him to come here and talk to you about how you can do these sorts of things and you can make a difference. It's critical. It's absolutely critical. You know, even if I don't check out of here real soon, people like me and Walter are going to be in the folks that get rounded up when they start rounding people up. And, you know, so getting the information out has got to be in the hands of the wide populace. You got to know how to do this. Walter, how can people participate in your project? How, I mean, if they can't come out to the premiere, what can they do?
Well, you mean as far as seeing the film or getting involved with themselves? Or?
Yeah, what can they do to see the film if they can't come to the premiere?
Okay, well, this premiere event is going to be the first time that it is, it's a premiere event in the sense that we're going to have the red carpet, we're going to have all the actors there. We're filming this event to include in the special features on the DVD. After the film is screened, I'm going to bring all my actors up on stage, introduce them, and the audience will get to do an interaction Q&A with them. It's a premiere event more than just a screening. I intend to submit the film to some festivals. In all honesty, as many festivals as I can afford to submit to and get it in. One of them being I want to submit to the Lovecraft Film Festival up in Portland, Oregon, that will be in the spring of 2013. There's a film festival in Big Bear, so hopefully it'll get several film festival screenings, but those won't be till next year. I may do some little sneak preview screenings in and out outside of the one in Redlands, but I doubt I'll be able to get to one of those before the Redlands event. But I am going to try to do some other screenings between November and next spring. So I would just continue announcing that at nobudgetcinema.blogspot.com. That's my blog, and that's where you can also, if you scroll around there, go a couple entries down, it takes you to the page describing the premiere event and the link where you can get tickets. But that's the place, nobudgetcinema.blogspot.com. is where I will be announcing other and future screenings. After the premiere in Redlands, we may do two other additional screenings at the same theater, and then I may take it around to different places in the Inland Empire and throughout Southern California to get it screened. And again, I'll announce that on the blog.
If you decide that you want to do a screening online, I want to do it as a special broadcast in our members' community. And
very likely be, I would only do that, if I was certain that, you know, people couldn't record it as they're watching it.
Yeah.
And I want to be very careful. I'll say this as a filmmaker. And I feel this way as a publisher. I have a very low opinion of the folks who take other people's intellectual property and feel like it's you know, their duty to just share it and destroy my opportunity to, you know, make any kind of profit on it.
Yeah. Well, as you should.
I'm very careful about that. I'm already planning screenings that require people to attend.
Uh-huh.
And I'm probably going to do that as long as I can before I even release the DVD.
Well, I certainly can understand that. All right. We only have a few minutes left here. If people want to get out there and they want to be a part of the premiere, they need to get their tickets. Where do they go to get their tickets?
Again, they go to nobudgetcinema.blogspot.com. And specifically, this is kind of a long one, if you want to go right to the page, if you go to nobudgetcinema.blogspot.com, you just scroll down till you see the Hell's Bells premiere event entry, and you click on that, and that describes the whole thing and takes you right to the PayPal link where you can get your ticket via PayPal.
Okay. And this is going to be on...
There's some fine print down below the link that, you know, you've got to be aware of. So.
All right, so this premiere is going to take place on what date?
On November 25th, Sunday night, 7 p.m. Goes. We'll roughly go from 7 to 8:30-ish.
Okay. And the actors are going to be present. You're going to be present. They get to see the film.
The film.
Yep. They get to see the film. They get to meet the actors, right?
Yep. They'll all be there, and we'll have a Q&A, and the whole event's going to be filmed, and it will be included on the subsequent DVD.
Outstanding. Walter, thanks for being with us this evening. Thanks for sharing some of this inside information on how we all can use our cameras and our brains and get our information out there. If you will, stay on the line with me for just a moment as I bring this in for a close. Folks, this tonight is a pivotal show because tonight you learned something. Even if you didn't want to, you learned that it is possible for you, it's possible for you to impact this world. You got a video camera and you got a brain. You can do it. And we all need to be doing it because the other side is working overtime, filling up YouTube and other sites similar with crap. The real information has got to get out there. And the only way we can do this is overwhelm them. We have to outnumber them. We have to overwhelm them with good information, and you are the key. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you'd like to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.